Chapter 160. Tim sat down beside Miss LaCreevy, and, crossing one leg over the other, so that his foot he had very comely feet, and happened to be wearing the neatest shoes, and black silk stockings possible should come easily within the range of her eye, said in a soothing way, "Don't cry. ... I must, ... rejoined Miss LaCreevy. "No, don't, ... said Tim. "Please don't, pray don't. ... I am so happy. ... sobbed the little woman. "Then laugh, ... said Tim. "Do laugh. ... What in the world Tim was doing with his arm, it is impossible to conjecture, but he knocked his elbow against that part of the window which was quite on the other side of Miss LaCreevy, and it is clear that it could have no business there. "Do laugh, ," said Tim, "or I'll cry." ? Why should you cry? ? Asked Miss LaCreevy, smiling. "Because I'm happy to, ," said Tim. "We are both happy, and I should like to do as you do." ? Surely, there never was a man who fidgeted as Tim must have done then, for he knocked the window again almost in the same place, and Miss LaCreevy said she was sure he'd break it. "I knew, ," said Tim, "that you would be pleased with this scene. ? It was very thoughtful and kind to remember me, ," returned Miss LaCreevy. "Nothing could have delighted me half so much." ? Why on earth should Miss LaCreevy and Tim Linkinwater have said all this in a whisper? It was no secret. And why should Tim Linkinwater have looked so hard at Miss LaCreevy, and why should Miss LaCreevy have looked so hard at the ground? "It's a pleasant thing, ," said Tim, "to people like us, who have passed all our lives in the world alone, to see young folks, that we are fond of, brought together with so many years of happiness before them. ? Cried the little woman with all her heart, "that it is. ? Pursued Tim, "although it makes one feel quite solitary and cast away. Now don't it? ? Miss LaCreevy said she didn't know. And why should she say she didn't know? Because she must have known, whether it did or not. It's almost enough to make us get married after all, isn't it? ? Said Tim. "Oh, nonsense. ? Replied Miss LaCreevy, laughing. "We are too old. Not a bit, said Tim. We are too old to be single. Why shouldn't we both be married, instead of sitting through the long winter evenings by our solitary firesides? Why shouldn't we make one fireside of it, and marry each other? ? Oh, Mr. Linkinwater, you're joking. ? No, no, I'm not. I'm not indeed, ," said Tim. "I will, if you will. Do, my dear. ? It would make people laugh so. Let 'em laugh, cried Tim stoutly. We have good tempers, I know, and we'll laugh too. Why, what hearty laughs we have had since we've known each other. ? So we have, cried Miss LaCreevy, giving way a little, as Tim thought. It has been the happiest time in all my life, at least, away from the counting house and Cheerable Brothers, said Tim. Do, my dear. Now say you will. No, no, we mustn't think of it, returned Miss LaCreevy. What would the brothers say? Why, God bless your soul. Cried Tim, innocently, you don't suppose I should think of such a thing without their knowing it? Why, they left us here on purpose. I can never look 'em in the face again. Exclaimed Miss LaCreevy, faintly. Come, said Tim, let's be a comfortable couple. We shall live in the old house here, where I have been for 40 years. We shall go to the old church, where I've been, every Sunday morning, all through that time. We shall have all my old friends about us, Dick, the archway, the pump, the flower pots, and Mr. Frank's children, and Mr. Nickleby's children, that we shall seem like grandfather and grandmother to. Let's be a comfortable couple and take care of each other. And if we should get deaf, or lame, or blind, or bedridden, how glad we shall be that we have somebody we are fond of, always to talk to and sit with. Let's be a comfortable couple. Now, do, my dear. Apostrophe, 5 minutes after this honest and straightforward speech, little Miss LaCreevy and Tim were talking as pleasantly as if they had been married for a score of years, and had never once quarreled all the time. And 5 minutes after that, when Miss LaCreevy had bustled out to see if her eyes were red, and put her hair to rights, Tim moved with a stately step towards the drawing room, exclaiming as he went, "There ain't such another woman in all London. I know there ain't." Apostrophe, apostrophe, by this time, the apoplectic butler was nearly in fits, in consequence of the unheard-of postponement of dinner. Nicholas, who had been engaged in a manner in which every reader may imagine for himself or herself, was hurrying downstairs in obedience to his angry summons, when he encountered a new surprise. On his way down, he overtook, in one of the passages, a stranger genteelly dressed in black, who was also moving towards the dining room. As he was rather lame, and walked slowly, Nicholas lingered behind, and was following him step by step, wondering who he was, when he suddenly turned round, and caught him by both hands. "Newman Knox!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Nicholas joyfully, "Ah! Newman, your own Newman, your own old faithful Newman! My dear boy, my dear Nick, I give you joy, health, happiness, every blessing! I can't bear it, it's too much, my dear boy, it makes a child of me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, where have you been?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Nicholas. "What have you been doing? How often have I inquired for you, and been told that I should hear before long?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, I know, I know." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," returned Newman. "They wanted all the happiness to come together. I've been helping them. I look at me, Nick, look at me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you would never let me do that." Apostrophe, said Nicholas in a tone of gentle reproach. "I didn't mind what I was then. I shouldn't have had the heart to put on gentlemen's clothes. They would have reminded me of old times and made me miserable. I am another man now, Nick. My dear boy, I can't speak. Don't say anything to me. Don't think the worse of me for these tears. You don't know what I feel today. You can't, and never will." Apostrophe, apostrophe, they walked into dinner arm in arm, and sat down side by side. Never was such a dinner as that, since the world began. There was the superannuated bank clerk, Tim Linkinwater's friend, and there was the chubby old lady, Tim Linkinwater's sister. And there was so much attention from Tim Linkinwater's sister to Miss LaCreevy, and there were so many jokes from the superannuated bank clerk, and Tim Linkinwater himself was in such tip-top spirits, and little Miss LaCreevy was in such a comical state, that of themselves they would have composed the pleasantest party conceivable. Then, there was Mrs. Nickleby, so grand and complacent, Madeline and Kate, so blushing and beautiful, Nicholas and Frank, so devoted and proud, and all four so silently and tremblingly happy. There was Newman so subdued yet so overjoyed, and there were the twin brothers so delighted and interchanging such looks, that the old servant stood transfixed behind his master's chair, and felt his eyes grow dim as they wandered round the table. When the first novelty of the meeting had worn off, and they began truly to feel how happy they were, the conversation became more general, and the harmony and pleasure, if possible, increased. The brothers were in a perfect ecstasy, and their insisting on saluting the ladies all round, before they would permit them to retire, gave occasion to the superannuated bank clerk to say so many good things, that he quite outshone himself, and was looked upon as a prodigy of humor. "Kate, my dear," apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, taking her daughter aside, as soon as they got upstairs, "you don't really mean to tell me that this is actually true about Miss LaCreevy and Mr. Linkinwater?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, indeed it is, Mama. Apostrophe, why, I never heard such a thing in my life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Nickleby. Mr. Linkinwater is a most excellent creature, apostrophe, reasoned Kate, and, for his age, quite young still. Apostrophe, for his age, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Nickleby. Yes, nobody says anything against him, except that I think he is the weakest and most foolish man I ever knew. It's her age I speak of. That he should have gone and offered himself to a woman who must be, half as old again as I am, and that she should have dared to accept him. It don't signify, Kate. I'm disgusted with her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, shaking her head very emphatically indeed, Mrs. Nickleby swept away, and all the evening, in the midst of the merriment and enjoyment that ensued, and in which with that exception she freely participated, conducted herself towards Miss La Creevy in a stately and distant manner, designed to mark her sense of the impropriety of her conduct, and to signify her extreme and cutting disapprobation of the misdemeanor she had so flagrantly committed. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.